are Locked On 76ers, your daily Philadelphia 76ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to Locked On 76ers. I'm your host, Keith Pompey. I got my man, Mr. Michael Lee, back in the house. What's up, Mike?
Hey, what's good? What's good, man?
Nada. Let me stop.
So before we get started, you know, let's first give props to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. I mean, yeah.
The influence that he's had on this country and this world.
Especially on us.
Especially on us. But hey, on all of us, man. We all got to recognize the greatness, and we also got to appreciate just the influence that he's had, and the radical revolutionary ideas that he tried to bring to this nation. And let's try not to look at the sanitized version that people try to throw down our throats. The man was very complex. He had a lot of layers to him. He was not some cartoon character.
Yeah, you're right. And I mean, it's funny though, because I think about it, and the one thing I will say about my mom though, it was weird. I had like perfect attendance in high school for all 4 years, so don't laugh at me.
But no, I had perfect. That's good.
But what's wrong with that? Because everybody used to call me a nerd for going to school every day. But the only days I missed was Martin Luther King Day. And it got to a point where the school just said, we're going to give you a perfect attendance anyway. Because they knew that it was all about what they knew what my mom was trying to instill in me. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And like, I went to a predominantly white school. And they still had the respect for it because they had the respect for him, for Martin Luther King. So you're right. This is a special day. And, you know what I mean? It's weird because it's funny. Not weird, but it seems like the Sixers were always covering the Wizards. And you used to cover the Wizards.
Yep.
So it was always a, hey, man, happy Martin Luther King Day. You know what I mean? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it is what it is. But, you know, last night, the Sixers defeated the Houston Rockets 121-93. Dude, I was shocked the way they blew them out.
Yeah,
that was an impressive win. It was extremely.
No Jimmy Butler.
And like y'all, for the first segment, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the game. We're going to talk about the head-to-head matchup between Embiid and Harden. It wasn't head-to-head, y'all, but you know what I mean.
MVP duel.
And then secondly, what we want to do is we want to talk a little bit about, you know, Embiid's back, you know, him playing. Should he play? Should he rest? And then we got to talk about Corey Brewer and his roster. You know what I mean? What are they going to do? Because they could use Corey Brewer, but they could use other people as well.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that. But first off, let's get into about this game. And just give me your thoughts and give me your thoughts about the head-to-head MVP duel.
Well, first off, I think it was an impressive win, you know, especially since I guess Brett Brown wasn't aware that they were going to have Jimmy until maybe an hour or two before tip-off. I think that to come out here, they didn't even know they had Joe until game time, right? But you knew Joe wasn't going to sit out this game. I mean, on national TV against an MVP candidate, like, you know he was going to come out fired up. And he always said he's the James Harden of bigs. You could tell, like, in the first quarter, he was like, I'm going to draw every foul possible, and I'm going to get to the line. I'm going to send a message. And I was just really impressed by the game plan that they used against Harden. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can't really stop him. You saw he had 37.
Mm-hmm.
He could get 50 in his sleep, really. But they really made a concerted effort to make sure that nobody else got off. Because if you look at just the stats, I mean, it was like you see why Harden – is like getting all the props for MVP because he has no help at all. And he's doing it all by himself. Chris Paul's out. You know, they seem to just always have somebody down. They're signing new guys every day off the street. They had Kenneth Reed.
I know,
you know,
right?
Just everybody's like, just they got to fill out something with a healthy roster. So it is a challenge. But I was impressed by just the way they attacked. You know, I think they had 6 blocks in the first half on Harden. You know, 3 from Bolden, and then Embiid had one, Simmons had one, you know, and Muscala had one. Like, everybody got some. So Harden was getting his, but he had to really work for it. So it was just a really great effort.
Yeah, it was. It was a really great effort. But the thing that, like, impressed me was that Butler wasn't there and they were able to win without him.
Yeah.
And, I mean, because the thing is, I'm saying earlier today, I mean, earlier yesterday, I was on a radio show and I was like, look, man, you got to put Jimmy Butler on him. I mean, you have to. I mean, yeah. You know, I think he's going to kill him without Jimmy Butler. I still thought he was going to get his points with Jimmy.
Yeah.
But you had to put Jimmy on him. And then you find out that Jimmy's not playing. And you're saying to yourself, like, oh, Lord, I feel sorry for these dudes.
Especially Corey Brewer coming off the street.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Like, you on a 10-day, like, hey, well, here's James Harden. Yeah. Good luck.
Good luck. And then the funny thing is like, you know, you like, Brett's, you know, they were talking about he's a good perimeter defender. But he's like, dude, but that's James Harden. You know what I mean? That's James Harden. And don't get me wrong. Like, I know James is getting his shot blocked. But he was getting to spots. He was hitting threes. Yeah. You know, he was doing everything that you expected. I mean, but it wasn't like you said. It wasn't like lack of effort and they had a quality game plan.
Well, he only had 3 assists.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one thing about Harden. I think, you know, during the streak where he's getting 40, 50 a night, he's also getting 8, 9, 10 assists to go along with that.
Mm-hmm.
When you know that means he's in complete control.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what makes him so unique is that I think his last 200-something points mm-hmm. have all been unassisted. So he's just doing it all just by probing and, like, figuring it out, and he's setting all his teammates up. But if his teammates can't get the ball or there's no passing lanes and there's nothing for him to do, you just turn him to just strictly a scorer, then you have a much better chance of winning. I thought they did a great job of doing that, of just not shutting down Harden, but shutting down Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Because Harden is the system.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's not moving the ball and guys aren't getting shots, then basically what purpose
does the
whole
there.
System have? And I think that's really what they did. And I think you mentioned them not having Jimmy Butler. It's interesting that now they're 3-0.
Yeah, without Butler.
Jimmy,
yeah.
And, you know, they'd be...
Well, they're actually 3-2. They actually 3-2, but they're on a 3-game
winning
streak.
They won their last 3.
Yeah, without them. Yeah, yeah.
And that was against Dallas and...
Dallas, Phoenix.
Yeah.
Phoenix was on the January 2nd in Dallas. And both of those games were close, though. Embiid averaged like 35 points in those games.
Yeah, and I think these games he's missing or all of this is sort of solidifying Joe's argument for being MVP. And we've talked about this before. You know, he said after the game, you know, that he was really excited about going up against Harden because he said, you guys always talk about people who are better than I am and when they're not. Which, like, you know, Joe's checking it out. And so this game meant a lot for him to come out there and play, which – for him personally, but I think that the Sixers do have to kind of take a step back and sort of look at the big picture with this with Joe. Because while he had a great game, 32-14, he had that nasty block and stare down afterward on Harden. They had a little chippiness there where they talking smack to each other. It's like he must have something against LA guys because he had Russell Westbrook in the last one.
He also
said that Russell was crazy for acting up, you know, after the game and the other night. So. But the Sixers do have to figure out some way to protect Joe from himself because I know he wants to play. And you mm-hmm. know that he's a competitive guy and he wants to, you know, he's young, so he wants to prove to everybody that he's the man.
Mm-hmm.
But you also know how difficult it is.
Yeah.
This is a guy who had the broken face last year and they were trying to hold him out. Then in the playoffs, mm-hmm. he cussed everybody out on Instagram. And they basically were embarrassed in the playing. So it's just hard, like... You know, because Brett was saying before the game that, you know, Joe's got to raise his hand and say, hey, I probably mm-hmm. shouldn't be playing. But Joe's never going to raise his
mm-hmm.
hand. He's been waiting how long to be playing at this level and be dominating?
Yeah.
So I don't know how they protect him from himself. But, well, I mean, what do you suggest?
I mean, I'll tell you what I suggest when we get right back from this commercial break. All right. What I suggest is, I mean, it's a tough situation. I mean, before I say what I suggest, because... You know, in Joel, I remember last year Joel said, man, I just want to play whenever I can. He said, I mean, I missed my first 2 seasons.
Yeah.
And I missed 51 games in my 3rd season.
Yeah.
So whenever it's time for me to play, I'm going to play. Because I remember his hand was swollen when he said last year. We, it, like the team was in Houston. and he played. And I'm like, whoa, dude. And that's when he said that. So to me, you know, I know they said he has to raise his hand. But it comes a point in time when y'all got to just lay down a hammer. I mean, because, yeah, you know, because he's always going to want to play.
Always.
I mean, like,
give him the option.
You give him the option. Like, and I don't blame him. Like, Michael Jordan always wanted to play.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Kobe always wanted to play.
Yeah.
I mean, there are certain dudes, and especially when you're a guy who's always injured, and yeah, people are like, oh, he's soft. He doesn't have. He's like, nah, I want to play. But my thing is, it's like, tonight, it was good that he played, but he was going up against 6'6", 6'7" dudes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Ken Reed was just off the street.
He just off the street. He was killing them. And the thing is, it's like, so, yes, he was able to do stuff, but it wasn't like he was going up against Steven Adams. It wasn't like he was going up against Miles Turner or the other guys. You know what I mean? So, in other words, he did look phenomenal.
Yeah.
But my thing is he's not getting banged in the back like he would against the other dudes. So this would have been a great.
You're okay with him playing?
I mean, he could have played. Well, my thing is, well, here's the thing. Like, okay, he got good stats tonight. He looked great. He moved well. But would he have done the same thing against other people? And so a lot of times we look at the night's game and you say, yeah, the brother is back. He's straight dominating. And then they go play Wednesday and he'll struggle a little bit. So I think that you didn't need him tonight. Now, in hindsight, we're saying you didn't need him tonight. But at the same time, it's like you got to rest him. You got to take a day off. And, like, this might have been a good time. But at the same time, I see where the Sixers are coming from. Because let's face it, a lot hinges on Joel Embiid.
Everything does. They are not a team with championship aspirations if Joe isn't around.
I mean, right? Yeah, you're right.
So, I mean, and you got to think, this is January 21st.
Yeah.
You're not winning anything in January.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you talk about guys who are competitive and want to play. I'm pretty sure Tim Duncan wanted to play.
Yeah.
Right? But the Spurs were like, hey, for your long-term health, we're going to have to shut you down. We got to stretch you out and, you know, turn this career into, like, a 19-year career where mm-hmm. you can, you know, do it for a mm-hmm. long period. And you don't want to just exhaust this guy that you're paying a lot of money into and so that you're going to need down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So I know Joe's going to be difficult. He's going to fight. He's going to push back. But you also have to say, you know, if we lose a game in January, yeah, it may haunt us down the road. We're trying to get playoff positioning. But it ain't going to haunt us worse than him being hurt
and
not
true.
Being around
That's
at
true.
The end.
That's true.
So you got to sort of think about, like, you know, is it in our best interest to just have him go out there? If he had, now Joe tried to play it down and say it's not that big a deal. He's played through it. He can fight through it. But, and everybody fights through something during the course of the season. But back, some injuries you just are like, I ain't messing around with that.
Nah.
You know, back is one of, whenever you hear that, you're like, ooh.
Yeah, especially a big man.
A big man. Yeah, it's not like, you know, it's just some minor thing that you can't just, you can just shrug off. And it's going to be something that the Sixers are going to have to deal with because, like I said, Joe's not going to shut himself down.
Mm-mm. Yeah, but the problem is, like, you know, you look at him and he's so dominant.
Oh, man.
I mean, and the team is, I mean.
On both ends.
On both
it's
ends.
It's not just that he's a scorer.
And there's a drop-off when he's out in the game.
I mean, the one thing, and you've also seen the nights that they have sat him against, say, the Hawks.
Yeah.
That's a game you expect him to win, whether he plays or not, and you blow the game against the Hawks, you know? And those are opportunities for, say, Ben to, like, take control or Jimmy to kind of take control. But when Joe doesn't play, they don't look like Mm-mm. a special team.
No.
Where, unlike last year, you know, when he got hurt and he had the injury at the end of the season, they were rolling. But Ben just seemed to just take so much control of the team at that moment that you felt like, okay, we can actually ride out the rest of the season and maybe even the first round or first couple games of the first round without him and be okay. And they were.
Mm-hmm.
So, but now it just seems like they are so dependent on Joe that they're in a tough position. I mean, they had to think about the long term.
Yeah, I mean, like, here's an example. So, like, okay, it was a blowout win today, right? A blowout win. Ben Simmons was 3 for 12 from the field, right? J.J. Redick was 1 for 5 on threes. Now, it was a blowout win, though. Yeah. But then you look at Embiid, and he's 9 for 16. He's 14 of 17 on threes with on 3-throw line. Yeah, that's a lot of threes, Keith. It would have been.
If he had 14-2, talk about a different story.
I know, right? 100 points. It will. And then, then he had 3 blocks. You know what I mean? So you're looking at the – and then Jimmy didn't play. So you're looking at – we're talking about the third star is 3 for 12. The second star doesn't play. And the three-point specialist is 1 for 5. So you know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like this. And then – you know, a guy that we're going to talk about in the next segment, you know, Corey Brewer, I mean, some shots he threw up, be like, yo, bruh. But that's,
but that's him.
Like, yeah, but at the end of the day, he was 5 for 10. Yeah. You know what I mean? With 11 points in 32 minutes. So, you know, he played the most minutes of anyone on the team in the game. He was 32. He played 32 minutes, 43 seconds.
He worked hard to get that 11 points.
Yeah,
he was working hard to get that 11 points.
He scored 4 of their first 6 points.
Yeah, on the dunks.
But, yeah, he played. I mean, he played well. But, look, when we get back from this break, we'll talk about Corey Brewer. So, Mike, what really impressed you tonight about Corey Brewer?
Just how annoying he was. You know, because I actually asked Harden about it after the game. I was like, yo, man, what was it like going up against him? And he's like, he's annoying. Just like he just – and he said, but he got to be, you know, because he's on a 10-day. He's trying to leave an impression. And when you pick up a guy 94 feet, you standing over him right after he fall down, you dunk and you immediately chase him to make sure he doesn't get the ball. Like, you could just tell, like, he knew that he got the start, you know, which wasn't expected. And so he's like, I got to make the most of this. And he really did. Like, he really went at Harden. You know, you can't stop James. So you can say, well, James still got 37, so what? Nah, but it's like, it's different when, you know, he got 37, but he had to really work for that. You know, he took 26 shots. And the most impressive thing about the whole night, other than the 3 assists that he was limited to, he only took 8 free throws.
Mm-hmm.
Which meant that, you know, probably from his past knowledge as his teammate, because he played with him in Houston, so he knows him, and he's been, you know, guarding him forever since he's been in the league. So he wasn't falling for all of the okie-doke, because, you know, Harden is the best in the game at just coercing dudes. It's like he's a genie or something. He's just kind of lays it out there, and everybody's like, oh, I got to go for it.
Yeah.
They fall for it, but he didn't fall for it. So I think it was a guy on a 10-day, a vet, though. He's not just like a typical 10-day guy who's never had a shot. He's a guy that has a long career. And I was joking, like, he's probably the only guy that's been in the league, that played 12 years in the league without gaining 1 pound.
I know.
Because he's just as skinny as he was at Florida. But he's out there. He's effective. And he's managed to hold on in this league this long just by being just a tenacious competitor, scrappy, and just a pest. Just a little, just nuisance. Like, you could tell he was getting under James's skin, and kind of knocking him off his rhythm a little bit.
Yeah, he was funny though. One time James ran him over. You see that?
Yeah, trucked.
Like, trucked. Like, boom. Then Corey looking at the ref like, "Where the foul? Where the foul?"
But he was asking for it.
Like,
yeah. He'd be standing over me all the time. Like, you don't get knocked over.
Yeah.
But it makes an interesting dilemma because he's what the Sixers need.
Mm-hmm.
They need a whole lot.
Yeah,
you know, because they need another perimeter defender, because, you know, you talk about not having Jimmy, or, you know, and like, who's gonna guard him? But, you know, even with Jimmy, guys have had a chance. They've been eating off the Sixers this year. Yeah. Like, Kimba got a whole platter off the Sixers. Yeah, yeah, you know, took 3 times.
Yeah,
just feasting.
Yeah,
before Jimmy, after Jimmy, and so, you know, they need somebody who can come in there and relieve Jimmy of having those responsibilities, or Ben as well. So he fits with what they need. So you give him a second 10-day for sure. Definitely earn that. But do you sign him for the rest of the season when you know what you really need is another big who can stretch the floor for you? You know, like a veteran guy who can go out there and sort of give you what you need. you basically need what you lost in the Butler trade. You need Rob Covington and Dario Saric or somebody who can fill that role.
Yep.
And it's going to be harder to find that, like last year when they just picked up Ursula Yusova and Marco Bellinelli, two guys that just plugged in and automatically, boom, it clicks and it works. There just aren't those players that are going to be available in the market this summer. I mean, at the trade deadline, or then afterward in the free agent market when they, you know, become available.
And it's funny, too, because, you know, we're talking about the two guys they let go in the trade, right? But they also need a guy who has Markelle Fultz's skill set when he can, when he gets a shot together. And they also need a guy that has Zaire Smith's skill set.
Yeah.
Now, the thing about that is, like, Zaire is a rookie.
Yeah.
So sometimes it takes time.
You
don't know.
You can't throw him into this kind of... Like, Landry Shamet, like, he's actually been a lot more than they probably thought he would be.
A lot more.
And where would they be without him this year?
Yeah.
I mean, not that he's been saving
where would they be?
A bench, really, without
him. They don't have a bench. But when you look at Markelle, and Markelle's back, and you look at, I mean, Zaire, again, I know he's supposed to be, you know, he's a rookie. But they were, you know, the word is that he's a great defender. He's athletic. So we're talking about four people. Covington, Dario, Zaire, Markelle. And that's what they need. And that, and if, and like, you know, it could be kind of, it becomes frustrating because now it's like, we don't have this. We got to build a team. Well, you have it. Two of them aren't playing, and you got rid of the other two. And I understand why they got rid of the Dario and them, because you had to bring Jimmy in. But at the same time, it's like, wow.
Yeah, and the other issue you bring up, too, is like the one thing that the Boston series exposed in them is just their total lack of athleticism once you get past, you know, Ben and Joe. Like, they're like super athletes. But then after that, you're limited. You know, Markelle's a really good athlete, but, like, can he play ball? You know, and that's their main issue with him, because they have guys who are talented, you know, quote-unquote talented on the end of the bench, but they can't give them anything for whatever reason. They're injured or whatever it is they're dealing with. So they got a full roster now, but they got some dead weight from guys who they really would need, you know, who would fill the needs that they have. And I just, even if Markelle comes back, I don't even know where he fits and what role he's going to play, because you can't play him with Ben.
Mm-mm.
You can't play him with TJ.
Nope.
And where do you use him? What does he give you other than being like that, a tenacious kind of defensive-minded, scrappy guy who can maybe slow down a Kemba Walker or maybe a D'Angelo Russell or somebody that you might face in the first round? So, you know, you got to think about that. But it's tough because I think they kind of, if Corey keeps playing well, they're going to be sort of, they're going to have to give him, but he's not the final piece. So you wonder what they're going to do with the trade deadline.
I mean, my thing is, if Corey keeps playing well, I mean, you look at a guy like Justin Patton, and I'm not trying to wish bad luck, I mean, ill will on him or anything like that, but here's a guy that's not playing.
Yeah.
He's in the final year of his deal.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see them saying, bruh, we love you, we appreciate you, but we got to bring someone else in here.
Yeah, I mean, because I don't think anybody would be opposed to that right now, because if you look at their bench, you know, what they are lacking in that area is like a veteran who can play.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They got a lot of young guys. They got Amir Johnson, who's, like, there. He's a veteran presence, but, like, you're not counting on him to really help you win games. So they need a guy that can come in and sort of, you know, play, you know, where Wilson is and sort of give him that sort of stretch big. And maybe Corey can just be your Covington light. But we know they need more size.
They need more size. And see, and that's the thing about the dilemma, because, okay, so the two backup centers that they have, because Mike Muscala to me is more of a power forward.
Yeah.
I mean, I know he's a center, but he's more of a power forward to me.
Yeah, to me.
So, you know, you have Embiid, you have Amir, who doesn't get any burn, but he's kind of like a great teammate. He's always, you know, cheering stuff like that, getting guys together. I get that. And sometimes, you know, that's good for the locker room. It is. But then you got Justin Patton, who's only played in, what, one career game in two – I mean, it's two seasons. You know what I'm saying? And so it's kind of like – It's tough, man, because you got to get rid of one of them.
Yeah, and if you can't get anything from, you know, your rookie and your second year guy, I mean that's what's holding. Like the team is great. Like they're 31-17. So, you know, it's just kind of 1% problems, right? You know, you're still well, but you know, like they could be better. And I think what's keeping them sort of from like, you know, moving up, you know, is that they have two guys right now who could be big contributors that can't contribute.
Yeah, the two, nah.
And you wonder, like, Markell's around now, like, he's hanging out with the team, but, like, for what? You know?
Yeah.
Like, what are they going to wind up? How can he help this team? You know, because I guess he's working to try to play again this year, but I just don't know where he fits and where, you know, and what he can actually give them, because I don't know if he actually provides what they're missing.
Not right now. And here's the thing. So, like, if you're Brett Brown and we know, okay, so they're 2-1 right now on this tough stretch. 2-1. Guys are starting to buy in on the defense.
Yeah, right? That was impressive.
Yeah, they're starting to buy in on the defense. It seems like the players are starting to get their roles offensively. And now you got to try to bring him in. You know what I mean? And the best thing that might happen, if I'm Brett Brown, the best thing that's going on is he's out of shape. Because you don't have to force feed him right now.
That's true.
And then what's going to happen is T.J. McConnell, how many minutes he played? T.J. played 21 minutes tonight. There was times when T.J. got DMPs, coach's decision, because of, you know, because playing Markell. So now what's going to happen is, it's like, all right, do we make Markell the last man at the bench, or do we give him some burn? Because he is the draft pick.
He is the number one pick. Yeah.
So it's like, this isn't a good situation for Brett. Now, again, if you're the coach, you know, you're like, hey, I ain't playing a dude, but if you're getting stuff from the general manager and all that, like, yo, we need to play him to move him, you're done. But you ain't moving him right now.
At this point, you're stuck with him until, you know, the summertime. And so, and if you're trying to win now, which basically the Butler trade puts you in that position where that's what this is about now. Like, you are not settling for second round. You know, it's a failure if you don't go at least to the conference finals. So, and you got Joe playing at an MVP level, and I think that's where, you know, you kind of just, it's going to be interesting to see what Elton does, what the organization does to fill out, you know, this team, because I said it the day they made the Jimmy Butler trade, and with two months later, that could not be considered the final piece.
Nah, it's not.
Be the final move.
It's not.
Because they got to figure out something to fill out their roster and give these guys a legitimate chance. And, you know, because Corey, as great as a defender he is, his shot.
Yeah, he needs some help. He needs some work.
It's not something that you were going to be counting on.
Nah, not at all. But, Mike, I want to thank you for being in this podcast, and I want to thank you all for listening, and have a great day.